This is Internet Marketing.
Hello, Kelvin Newman here from Brighton SEO, the founder of Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist search marketing conference. Thanks for joining us on today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, formerly known as the Site Visibility Podcast, if you've been around for a few years. We've got a really exciting episode planned for you today. So we're going to be talking about online PR, outreach, so kind of touching onto link building, which is a big part of SEO as well. And we've got two real experts who are going to be having a conversation with me, talking about, outreach, PR, getting news coverage. Olivia Bentz and Will Wadron. Like I say, check it out. It's going to be a really interesting and exciting episode. Hello, Kelvin Newman here, and welcome to the Internet Marketing Podcast. I'm joined, as always, by some amazing guests. I'm really excited to welcome to today's session, where we're going to be talking about PR and outreach, link building, digital PR, and all of those kind of connected sort of areas. So I think it's going to be a really interesting conversation, which I hope you take a lot away from. But as always, when we start these shows, I like to get our guests to introduce themselves, to tell you a little bit about themselves, how they came to work in the industry, some of the things that they currently are involved in and their sort of areas of interest and all that sort of thing, really. So you get to know them a little bit. Olivia, is it all right to come to you first to kind of say, hey, what's the Olivia story, as it were?
Of course. Well, first, thanks so much for having me, Kelvin. So, as Kelvin said, I'm Olivia. I've had over 6 years of experience in working within the PR and digital PR industry. I'm currently a digital PR manager at the award-winning digital agency Bring Digital. So we specialise in search and affiliate marketing for leading e-commerce brands. So I kind of worked mainly consumer on sort of well-known brands, including Silent Night, Decathlon, even a few big beauty brands. And sort of my kind of passion within the industry is really building on tactics, on those relationship building exercises with journalists to secure those all important results.
Fantastic. And how about yourself, Will?
Nice to meet you guys, finally. I know we spoke a lot over emails. Thanks for having me as well. My name is Will. I always feel old saying this, but I think I'm in my 11th year now of working in marketing and PR. So I started out in music PR, so I used to work with DJs and bands and labels, festivals, that kind of thing. And then throughout the journey, lots of traditional. I currently work at the digital marketing agency C3, Connective 3. As the senior strategist, a lot of the why and the how and the development of why we do these campaigns, developing them, delivering them, getting the results, reporting, all of the sort of background stuff that goes around that and making sure clients are happy with the approach. So I'm hoping I can share some nice tips and advice.
Fantastic. No, that I've, like, it's really interesting to hear those kind of roots of how people came to work in the space. And I think kind of like it's interesting where you talked about that kind of offline or more traditional kind of PR as kind of your route into that. Is that kind of still a quite common approach, or are we seeing more and more as digital PR has become more mature, more and more people where it's like, well, actually, they've not come to it from SEO, they've not come to it from link building, they've not come from traditional, they've just always done it. Is that more and more an emerging pattern, or kind of like everyone's still got a random route for how they end up working in the space?
There's a bit of a method in everything, I guess. I think it starts with the type of client, I would say. So obviously I'm surrounded by the digital world in the minute, and that's mainly our focus. That's how we sort of drive results and measure all performance. But with traditional, I guess if you're an interiors brand, for example, if you're a very sort of image-led brand and you want it to be in print and that's where your focus target audience is, that's still very much a part of your strategy. I guess in terms of measurements with digital PR, it's an easier sort of tangible way of measuring the results of it. Mm-hmm. Whereas print, you can maybe say sort of the estimated readership and that sort of thing. But if it is the goal of the client for that creative visual side, then it's still really important, 100%.
And how about yourself, Olivia? Is that kind of like, have you, like you said, you're building a team there, there's, you know, increasing number of people involved there. Is it kind of like, you know, is it a discipline in its own right? Is it separate? Is it just a specialism in the way that like different agencies will you know, work in different ways? Are any patterns emerging, or is it just there's too much variety there to kind of go, well, this is how it works?
Yeah, it's a really interesting question. I think when I first started, I primarily started in the traditional space. So I was getting those print publications. And then I think for me in particular, and speaking about my experience, I wanted more, like I wanted to see the impact my coverage was having on clients. And I think that's where the digital PR space comes in really kind of nicely. I'm seeing a lot more like bigger integrated agencies that are primarily focusing on digital PR with a small space for traditional. I do think they're still really important. But like Will said, I think it does depend on the client. I do think it depends on you as an individual. For me, like I said, it was, I wanted to see the impact, like, am I getting traffic to the website? Is it helping revenue? How can I present? And I suppose we'll obviously talk about this later on, but how can we get those juicy results, but also impact the client in a positive way? So yeah, I think it does depend on those two.
And are the journalists you're dealing with, Olivia, you kind of talked about that that's a big part of that building, that connection, that relationship with them. Is it like actually, is even that a false distinction between online and offline? And it's like the, you know, the people who are working for the, like a magazine would be writing for the website, writing for the print edition, and actually that distinction's like, if you've got a good relationship with them, you're pitching them and you don't really like, you care where it ends up, but it's like a secondary to kind of like the format comes second rather than first.
I think we are in a time as well, like with journalists, like we are experiencing, I'm sure Will, you'll be able to sort of note on this, is that they're having a lot of redundancies. So I think it was just at the end of last year, Reach PLC were announcing like a ridiculous amount of redundancies. So we're seeing now a lot more journalists are going freelance. So those relationships are becoming a lot more important. And I think being more tactical in your approach to journalists has become even more important. We're seeing a shift, I would say, from journalists writing for one specific title to writing for a number. So I think like the approach for journalists has changed massively over the past few years. And I think it has got something to say about these redundancies. So yeah, I would say it's changed massively.
That's interesting, because potentially then if they're dealing, you know, so rather than pitching a publication and the journalist is a, like a function of that publication, you're pitching a journalist who could be in multiple places. And I suppose they themselves might be doing a degree of pitching for the, you know, for the articles. Is that something that, is that like the way it works? Or is it like, well, actually they've got a regular commitment that they're doing? Or like, so I suppose, are you ending up quite well aligned because, you know, you're wanting to pitch something a journalist wants to write about, but they're also wanting to, you know, pitch something that they're going to get published, right?
Yeah, I think it depends. Like, you will have those journalists that are, you know, specifically one topic. Obviously, that can change if there's breaking news. We are finding that like journalists might have pulled across a number of desks, but for the majority, if they're working for one title, they might have one specific area. But for freelancers in particular, I will always go and talk to them and be like, what are you working on? Is this something of interest? You know, and pitch them a few ideas and get to know what they pitched and what they're working on. So it's two different, I would say. But those that are working across multiple, I do try and be like, hey, what are you working on, to get that bit of insight so then we can build something that's going to help them. It's that helping method. I'll help you, you help me kind of thing.
And well, I imagine you're doing things along similar lines there. Is that a pattern that you've seen, that kind of switch from like staff journalist to freelance journalist?
Yeah, massively. I did one of my first talks actually was on journalist relationships, and I interviewed a few journalists, and the pressure they're having from downsizing is so intense that they're really being pushed to almost see their publication like we see our clients. So they're looking for the click-through rates and the traffic and the visibility for the publication. So when we're outreaching something now, we have to be really sort of tailoring the keywords in the press releases and making sure it's really relevant. And it's something that's genuinely going to help them. So I think they are feeling the pressure. So that kind of, you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours, let's help each other, as Olivia says, is really important. And if it's done correctly, it's working in our favours as PRs, because one of the hardest parts of the job is securing that relationship and getting the coverage and the links. So once you've established that now, I've found anyway, it's getting a bit easier to meet them in person and they really want to learn what you can offer them as well.
I suppose that, yeah, that's ideal, isn't it? Like, if everyone's aligned, that yeah. helps, right, rather than being in kind of opposition, which I think does seem to me is like, yeah, like being a little bit of a couple of steps removed. Feels like the conversations about digital PR 4, 5, 10 years ago was far more kind of like, not like how do you trick journalists, because that was never what it was, but it was all just that kind of, it felt like there was a degree of like, well, you've got a, like, it was a, not a battle, but you know, like a tension there. Whereas it does feel like now actually it's more just like, well, the collaboration benefits the client, benefits the digital PR, benefits the journalist, and then that's hopefully aligned to the publication's needs and desires as well. And you talk about kind of building the relationship there, Will. What are some of the like practical ways you could go about doing that? So say someone here is like, they've maybe not really done a lot of digital PR, but they've gone, okay, well, here's a journalist we'd really like to work with, and they'd want to kind of build the relationship. What are some of the kind of practical things you would like maybe be doing, or if you're bringing in a junior person to start having these kind of relationships with journalists, what are the things you're suggesting to them that they should be considering to like build this rapport?
Yeah, I think a lot of it comes down to having empathy to how busy their day is. So it sounds almost simple, but I think reliability is the key. So sending them relevant things that they actually cover. So for example, if you have a generic lifestyle editor title, what actual element of lifestyle do they cover? It could be anything from like the environment, sex and relationships, like knowing exactly what they do and sending them relevant things to them is always going to be a key start. And then there's just small things. So on pitch emails, one of the biggest pet peeves when I interview journalists was if you get the name wrong, for example, which happens to the best of us. We've all done it. Yeah. But really double checking your work. Is your pitch structured? Have you got any images in it that have sort of skewed the text? Is it easy to digest? Really simple things. And then I think the reliability of being quick at responding. So the ideal situation is if they have an idea that they want to put to their editor, they know they can come to you and you're going to send them some good resource or expert comment or insights or something like that. So you come to them as quickly as you can to avoid them going to a competitor or something like that. And the rapport kind of slowly builds up over time. It's not a case of anything, say if it's a finance journalist, just anything finance related, you think, oh, I'll send it straight to them. Really tailor what would they like, what is their writing style, what do they cover, is there something bespoke I can send them? And it's, like I said, it's kind of small details, but it really makes the difference for someone that's got such a hectic day that's hitting huge word counts all the time. And once you get to that level, meet face-to-face if you can, invite them to marketing events like Brighton SEO, and just slowly get to know them. And it sort of organically develops if you've got that mutual respect, I think.
But there's definitely kind of, I suppose, Olivia, like I can imagine work, because you're both agency side, and I know we'll have listeners who are agency side, some who are brand side. Like, and you talk about the kind of time pressures and time constraints and challenges that the journalists are facing. That's quite similar for an agency, right? So is that, and you know, if you talk about kind of what Will was suggesting there in terms of, well, you know, attention to detail, taking your time, all of it, that's a little bit intention, isn't it? And it's like, it does feel like, you know, I get the perception sometimes digital PR can be quite hard work in that, you know, you're living and dying by the coverage that you're getting. There's huge amounts of pressure that can sometimes be on, you know, agency staff just generally. Any kind of like advice for kind of like how you can, you know, manage that from, you know, the tension that there might be working, you know, agency side as a digital PR?
Yeah, I think everybody uses this phrase, and it's a great phrase, but everyone does use it, is that sort of work smarter, not harder approach. So obviously with digital, you're working to, I think, a lot stricter timelines. Like Will said, you know, you're going to send something to journalists and within an hour it could be online, whereas like with print they might be working 4 weeks, 6 weeks ahead, so you have a little bit more time. So one of the difficulties that we always face is clients being able to come back in time with the comments, with those time constraints. But we always say to them, you know, if it's not going to work for that journalist, if we don't get it in time, not to worry, we can reuse it. We can reuse it and go out to other contacts that we've got if it's a really good piece of comment. So being able to utilize the stuff that you've already got on board, or even that's on their blog, that's a quick tactic that's already been pre-approved, so we don't miss out on the opportunity. So utilizing the stuff that you've already got on board and not be too hard on yourself. I think taking it from like a personal perspective, you know, when you are working agency, you working across like multiple different clients with multiple different expertise. And I think sometimes it can be really hard to get stuck into wanting to get results, you know, wanting to impress like line managers or things like that. So I think for me, sometimes just to take a bit of a deep breath, know that you're good at your job, take your time, read through things, and know that you can get coverage, it will come, I think really helps with those kind of like pressures.
And Will, so we kind of like, we've talked there about like the time constraints that you're, you know, journalists and publishers, the time constraints and all that, you know, in responding to that, that your digital PRs are going to have, and then potentially the disconnect there on the kind of client side, or if you're working in-house, it might be your subject matter expert or whoever your kind of spokesperson is. Any kind of practical things you can suggest there? Because yeah, Olivia was talking about kind of like having pre-approved, like reusing stuff that's pre-approved. Any advice on kind of those turnaround times to, you know, set up yourself well to be able to respond quickly?
Yeah, I think it all stems from strategy side of things, really. This, a lot of the work I do is, if you have a client come on board or you need to think of a new strategy for the next quarter, it doesn't necessarily have to be, we need to hit 60 links because that's our KPI for this quarter. There are ways around it, and it all depends on what the client's sort of internal goals are. So as Olivia said, like reworking blogs, so you could have links to blog pages that they really want to perform because it's a certain product they're selling that they're promoting at the same time. And you can literally rework the blog. You can do things like link reclamation and get in touch with brands or stockists that are associated with, say, if it's a supermarket, you can go to those brands and see if they'll add a link into the site. Also, creating evergreen content. So there's loads of, as PRs, we love a calendar, don't we? Like days in National Awareness Days, Valentine's Day is coming up. So if you've done an evergreen campaign that the following year, you can literally tweak the data and go out with it again. Then do it, go for it. So you may have to come up with at the start of a quarter, like maybe one big planned campaign and a few proactives and things like that. But if you look at the work you've already done and the smaller sort of approaches into it, you might really only have to build one big planned campaign, and the rest of it, you've already almost got set up and good to go. And then if you're working closely with your team, which we always do with your execs and the wider team, delegation, everyone's got a job to do. And it's sort of what seems to be a big sort of mission at the start can soon turn into a very manageable approach.
And so Will, there, you mentioned the kind of like, yeah, a KPI might be something like a number of links, a number of quality. And obviously I can see the tension and difficulty of wanting to commit to that. What are some of the kind of measurements? And I'll go to Olivia on this actually. What are some of the measurements or ways you'd like determine if a campaign's been successful? Are there particular ones that you go to, or is it, yeah, does it vary, or, you know, things that people might be kind of going, well, if you were looking to commission a digital PR campaign, what might be some good things to be considering as like measures of success?
It's really interesting. We were actually talking about this as a team yesterday. So I think it kind of comes in three different strands, and there's a few different things that I think you have to take on board. For example, so budgets, you know, how much time have we got as a team to be able to dedicate to that client, I think can impact KPIs. So that's like sort of one thing, but I think in terms of like measurement, you've always got the obvious ones. So you've got number of links, average DR or DA can be a really good one. Relevancy of the titles. So from an SEO perspective, if we're working with a fitness brand and we've got comment or expert comment coverage in a home and lifestyle title, while it might have a really good DA or DR, it's not that relevant to the brand. So I think that's another good one that we want to start introducing to help with that sort of SEO reporting as well. How much traffic we've generated from links. So really going into the impact the link has had on the client. So traffic's always a good one. If we can, obviously digital PRs can be really hard. We can drive people to the website, but we can't get people to purchase. But if we have been able to, that's a really good way of reporting on return of investment. And I think that's a really nice one to include. So I think, like number of links, relevancy, traffic, revenue. And I think a breakdown of like follow, no follow links as well is also a really good one. Tough though, that's a really tough one, because I think as we know, we are going into an environment where journalists are becoming quite tricky on giving follow links. You know, we are seeing that more of affiliated links being included, especially for product-based clients. So that can be really tricky, but I do think it's a good one to include.
Well, does that match up with kind of some of the ways you're measuring, or like, you know, determining if a campaign's been successful or not?
Yeah, for sure. I think it all, as Olivia said, it goes down. It starts with the retainer and what you're trying to achieve for the for their budget. I think the next steps as well on top of that is working widely with your SEO team. So very much, yes, we've kind of ticked these boxes and hit these KPIs, but what has that done for the business and your growth and revenue? So looking at their visibility and keyword rankings and the traffic. And a really good way of looking at this as well is obviously Google Core updates happen very frequently. We never know when they're going to drop. But if you've seen a spike in visibility and it's maintained that spike based on your strategy, then it's the old marketing term, isn't it? Or the digital marketing term. We're trying to get Google to like us. Mm. So if we see that their update favors our work, we know, okay, let's stay on this path. And then if obviously it drops, you need to have a rethink of the strategy and switch things up. But yeah, it's always been a tough one. Like Olivia said, with PR, it's not the most tangible thing to say this alone is going to drive you revenue. Mm. But when it's hand in hand with the rest of the teams, the SEO, the paid, the content, and it's all working with a technically efficient website, and you can see those visibility spikes and the revenue growing, yeah, you can definitely start patting yourself on your back after that bit.
Fantastic. Yeah, I think that's it. I think that's, yeah, really, it is that kind of, it's, yeah, like, I think, you know, in the nature we have these, I have these conversations on the podcast around all kinds of different topics. And the reality is, it's like, yeah, it's nice for us to compartmentalize something down into a topic that's going to work in a 20, 25 minute podcast episode. But the reality is, it's all about, like, it's interdisciplinary, it's, you know, between teams and departments, and yeah, you can't just kind of look at one thing in isolation necessarily. So that gave me a really good sense of some of the things you want to be thinking about in terms of like outreach and PR and like the building relationships with journalists. I always like to kind of close out the show with asking people for recommendations of resources, be it like websites or books or newsletters or particular people to follow or a bit of research that they've seen recently that they felt was quite useful. Olivia, is there any kind of that stand out to you that you can kind of think of off the top of your head that you suggest people might like to go and have a look at?
Oh, that's a really good question. So for me, I always think when putting together a digital PR campaign or just a PR campaign in general, creativity can be really difficult. And I always think creating a good brainstorm environment is one of the keys for creating a very good, successful PR campaign. So one of the books that I read, which I thought was fantastic, was The Art of Creative Thinking by Rod Judkins. So for people that might want to try and differentiate or make something a little bit different for their brainstorms, that could be a really good starting point for them.
Fantastic. That sounds like a good one to check out. And we'll drop that into the show notes as well. So if you're watching on YouTube, it'll be in the little description bit. And if you're on the various podcast platforms, all those places the show notes be, we'll try and include a link through to that one that Olivia mentioned there. And how about yourself, Will? Any kind of like suggestions for things that people might like to check out?
So this is, I kind of apologise for this being a bit of a shameless plug, really.
But no such thing as a shameless, like, that's what we want, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to go for it. It's just basically at where I work in Active 3. So over the last, well, I've been there about a year and a half now, but I've just seen the growth from the marketing side and the resources, because the team spans multi-channel, like I said, SEO, PR, et cetera. And just the materials that we're developing, from vlogs to case studies to the talks and the events. And there's just, I feel like I've learned more at C3 than a lot of the books and things I've read, the kind of doing and the seeing. So yeah, shameless plug, but we have so many materials. Even just following them on LinkedIn is like so useful, just for little quick snippets.
That leads me really nicely to my final question as well, Will, in terms of like, if people want to kind of like keep in contact or see the stuff that you're up to, what's the best way for people to kind of track you down in the kind of online environment?
Yeah, LinkedIn, obviously the go-to. There's multiple sort of events. I know Digital Bites and Up North has been confirmed in Manchester this year. Twitter, the usual, or grab me on email, yeah?
Fantastic. Yes, yeah, so we'll make sure we include those. And how about yourself, Olivia?
Yeah, LinkedIn, Twitter, and then if anyone is coming to Brighton SEO in April, it'd be lovely to see you, and you can always come and say hello.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for your time on that. I've learned a lot. I think that our listeners will have picked up some really interesting practical things they can do to improve their outreach and improve their digital PR. So thanks so much for your time on that one. And thanks to all of our listeners and viewers or watchers. I can never quite sure which one to say. But thanks for joining us today. And we will see you again real soon. Thanks for your time, everybody.
Thank you, guys. See you soon.
Thanks so much for joining us for today's episode of the Internet Marketing Podcast, produced by the team behind Brighton SEO, the world's largest specialist digital marketing conference covering SEO, PPC, paid social, web analytics, and content marketing. If you want to find out more about us and the show, you can check out the website, internetmarketingpodcast.org. And if you've not already subscribed to the show, you should hit that subscribe button. And can I ask a favour, if you are subscribed and you're enjoying the show, can you leave us a review wherever you're watching or listening to the show? And if you want to get in touch, become a guest on the show, or just generally feedback about what we're doing, you can always email me. That's kelvin@brightonseo.com. So kelvin@brightonseo.com. Or of course, you can contact me on social media. So LinkedIn or Twitter, my usernames are Kelvin Newman. See you soon.